What's up, everybody? Welcome into another episode of the Celtics Talk Podcast here on the NBC Sports Boston Podcast Network. Got a little bit of a loaded show. We're going to start. I took your mailbag questions off of Twitter. I'm going to answer some of those here at the front half of the show. And then on the back end, we got our exclusive chat with Al Horford, who dropped in the Celtics post up, had a little fun with Al, and you'll get to hear that at the end. But I just felt like, you know, we're nearing the midseason. I could have come up with topics and all that, but I wanted to see what's on the mind of fans right now. And probably unsurprisingly, a lot of trade talk inside the mailbag. But I do want to start we said a lot coming into the month about this, the December would be sort of like this chance for the Celtics to figure out what to do and what Brad Stevens should do moving forward. And I'll admit, coming out of December, I didn't have a lot of the answers that I was seeking. And so I don't know how Brad Stevens can definitively make a path forward. So I do think there's some questions to be answered, some uncertainty about what this team should do. But certainly when you look at the record, it's hard not to ignore the fact that we're on, as you've heard me say on this program many times, 2.5 seasons of 500 basketball, and something probably needs to change, but I'm not exactly sure, you know, there's an obvious answer of what that is. And it's hard because they go out there and they play one of their best games of the season, despite being shorthanded against Phoenix, look like someone who can actually compete with legitimate contenders, then come back a couple nights later. And all of a sudden it's like they've forgotten to play basketball and they're heading towards a bad loss against an Orlando Magic team that really doesn't want to win games until Jaylen Brown rescues them. But even in that moment, Jaylen Brown goes for 15. You're thinking, okay, you know, all of a sudden all the people that want to trade Jaylen Brown are a little bit quieter. But I say that, and then we pulled up the strings of the mailbag this week and, plenty of consternation to go around. So let's just dive right in. I'm going to start with Jeffrey Mattson, who said, what is the most realistic trade option for the Celtics without moving Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, Marcus Smart, or Time Lord Robert Williams? And so to me, this is the overarching question for the Celtics. And so when I look at what the core has done this year, they've been fantastic, right? Like the numbers when those four are on the court are some of the best in the league, one of the best four-man units. I think they're up at one of the like fourth or fifth best five-man lineups based on net rating. They haven't played a whole lot, so maybe that number comes down as we see it more healthy, which might just happen on Wednesday night when the Celtics have pretty much full health when Jason Tatum is back. Only Aaron Nesmith remains in COVID protocols. So, but the point here is that if I'm Brad Stevens and I say, well, the four-man core that he pretty much assembled by extending Marcus and extending Rob this offseason, it's looked really good. Are you in a rush to change that when that might not be the biggest issue here? Now, certainly that group is at fault for not being able to close games, for some of the waning and inconsistency and inability to get to the finish line. But I think I tinker on the fringes. And then that question becomes, well, is that enough? And so it's why I keep going back to this. As much as I love the whole conversation about trades, it's like in the past, I would say, oh, they need to go get a power forward. That's what they're really missing. That could put them over the top in terms of being a legitimate contender. But now I look at the roster and I say, you know, I don't know. They probably could still use a definitive four, maybe someone other than Al Horford, as good as Al has been. Maybe they need that next impact player to either be a four, or, you know, is it a point guard that allows markets to shift a little bit? I don't know. So that's the hard part for Brad Stevens. And then it becomes who's available. And so as you'll hear coming up, a lot of people have some ideas on that, but I think Jeffrey's point is right. Like, so we'll get into this later too, but Dennis Schroeder, I've told you guys, I don't think he's long for Boston. I think they understood that coming in, that if there's a contender out there that they could get him an asset for him, they would do that. But is changing some of these bench pieces enough to push this group over the top? Maybe a couple of weeks of full health here will answer that question. We'll see how the Celtics look. The strength of schedule will help them as well, but there's just not like, I feel like I'm part of the group that wants to keep that core together because I do see the potential. But, you know, is that enough just tinkering on the fringes? And then you start thinking like, so what is realistic trade option? If you're not getting into the category of bigger names without necessarily trading off one of those pieces. And so some other people feel differently than me. And that's why Tom Hall, I thought it was a very well worded tweet here. He said, am I nuts to think we consider moving off Tatum? Feels like Brown plays more in the flow of the offense and Tatum's value would be loads higher. Could easily get another all-star and likely more. I feel bad for even entertaining the thought. Well, don't feel bad, Tom, because Jim Morocco followed yours up and said, Chris, why aren't we talking more about trading Tatum? He's not a one, but is your most valuable asset and can help restock the cupboard for the future. And so, all right, this just sort of underscores the calamity in Celtics Nation right now that people are entertaining the idea of trading Jason Tatum. And I get it. You know, just came off a night where Jaylen Brown had a magical night. And maybe some people are like, well, you know, you can get more for Tatum. It's better to surround Brown in this core with other pieces. But I just want to be clear here. When I think about how the Celtics will move forward, I think Brad Stevens starts small, like trading Dennis Schroeder, trading on the fringes. Okay, that doesn't work. Maybe Marcus Smart gets moved and you think, because maybe you need that playmaking point guard that can accentuate the talents of the Jays. Okay, that doesn't work. You know, maybe then you do have to entertain the idea of moving Jaylen Brown just because maybe you can't get an all-star caliber player in return. And then that doesn't work. Okay, I think after that, you'd probably see like, you know, Ime, you know, does he end up in the spotlight just not being able to get those two over the hump? Does Brad end up in the spotlight? Not enough moves to get Jason and Jaylen where it is. So I'm just saying, like, these are all the bridges that will be detonated before you even come close to TD Garden. I think, like, tearing down TD Garden will happen before Jason Tatum is traded from the Boston Celtics. So I think that's the very last bridge that goes, that if this thing just doesn't work. And I just can't see it getting to that point. Now, maybe there is, you know, a couple of years down the road, Tatum's more towards the end of his deal. And, you know, maybe Bradley Beal doesn't end up in Boston and Jason Tatum starts fantasizing about playing with him somewhere else. Like, the league is weird and these things could certainly happen. But I think the Boston Celtics will ultimately try everything within their power to make this work. And it's a lot harder to find the next Jason Tatum than it is to trade him and bring in some guy that somehow makes your team even more better. Does Jason Tatum have strides to make? 100%. And he's got to find a way to go to that next level, be even better at the end of games, all the little things that we talk about consistently. But just think that ultimately, like, I can't even, it's hard for me to even entertain it in my mind because I think it's so far-fetched. I don't think another player of his caliber that makes sense in even a one-on-one or a two-for-one swap would even become available. And so I just don't get too far down that road. All right, shifting to some more general trade talk. Steve Hancock's on my wave of thinking. He says here, moving Tatum and JB is a massive no-go. Therefore, can we get a primary ball handler that can also space the floor like a De'Aaron Fox from the Kings? And how much would it cost to get him? And he says, ideally, not losing Time Lord in any trade. Well, I'm just going to tell you, on this podcast, we don't trade Time Lord. So we're not even going to entertain that option. But certainly this is Boston's conundrum right now is that, okay, you got Jason and Jaylen. You want to add a third star around them. Here are your pathways. You can wait to the summer and make some roster changes, move off of Al Horford's final year of his deal, maybe move Josh Richardson, cut bait with some of the rookies on your or younger players on your roster. And then you might have up to like $20 million worth of space. You keep your core, your four-man core, you still go get somebody. So now we're talking about, you see Lonzo Ball sign with the Bulls this offseason for around $20 million. That's the caliber of player you might be able to go get. The problem, when I look at the impending free agents, there's no Lonzo Ball out there, and it makes not getting him this past offseason or trading for him the season before a little bit more frustrating, because as me and a number of guests on this program have said, that was always sort of the ideal sort of fit, at least the prototype of what I thought could best accentuate the Jays, a bigger playmaking guard whose three-point shot has evolved to a point where it's enough to keep defenses honest. And so I don't know if that player is necessarily out there. Maybe you're just, if you're Brad Stevens, you're crossing your fingers and waiting for that player to become available. So I do think a lot of us naturally look at Sacramento, who is overflowing with point guards, not only with De'Aaron Fox, but as Tyrese Halliburton goes to another level. And that draft's going to forever haunt me as well, because as Halliburton started to slide, I'm thinking Celtics move up. It's the one year you feel like you didn't have the Kings pick when you could have got to that point and maybe gotten a player like that. So I don't necessarily see a guard out there. And I think De'Aaron Fox, if they're going to move him, it's going to cost a Jaylen Brown type in return, even as his numbers kind of came back down. And as good as Halliburton has been, you know, he is probably their most attractive trade chip, and they're not going to move off him easily. And the other thing for Sacramento is that as long as they linger in the playoff race, they're always going to want to be in there. So I think they're more likely buyers than sellers. And so I think it would be hard for them in the moment to move on, but they do have some tough decisions to make if Halliburton continues to play well. The one thing they have done is De'Aaron Fox has been playing a little bit more off the ball. You know, this is the NBA. You don't need necessarily a one and a two anymore. Both guys can handle the ball, and I think it's worked out well for them. So I as much as I like the idea of the Fox conversation, I think it invokes Jaylen Brown, and I don't think that is going to happen. And that's the problem with a lot of the names out there right now. So, I mean, there's Ben Simmons, but we know the headaches that come with that, and the 3-point shooting isn't there to space the floor. Sabonis in Indiana, you would think, is potentially available. I don't know how well he meshes if you are committed to Rob, as this program is, as your center of the future. I don't know if those two can necessarily coexist. And again, the price, I just feel like all-star talent is going to require an all-star going out, and the Celtics don't have the young talent or the draft picks to make teams consider those moves. This isn't like before. Now, all that being said, we have seen teams around the league make deals, the Nets giving up a bunch of picks for James Harden. And, you know, you can throw a bundle of picks together to at least make teams think, but you need some young talent. You need something to just at least be a little bit more than just the prospects of the future in most cases to get a star. And so that comes down to developing young talent or making the move before the move. And that's why I think Brad is sort of probably his biggest challenge this February trade deadline, is that if there's no obvious choice to like how to move forward in season and make deals, then maybe it's just trying to work on the fringes and stock your draft picks to get a maybe more attractive talent that other teams would desire. And even those moves aren't easy. So there, it's hard. There's just the pathways isn't as easy. So I don't see that play out there. And the Sabonis, I should give a shout out to Luke, who likewise tweeted, is there any chance to go get Sabonis before the trade deadline? I'll just keep saying it. I don't know if there's a move that makes sense for Indiana, unless they're really committed to taking a huge step back and building off of draft picks. And even then, you just don't have the attractive. You need to trade something to get something that where at least it could become a high lottery pick. And the Celtics just don't have that right now. You know, we started talking earlier, Dennis Schroeder, Braden Steele says, how can the Celtics best handle Schroeder's upcoming free agency? Trade him for something small or just let him walk because he is almost definitely not resigning due to the limited cap space. Harry Mann Jr., big fan of NBC Sports Boston in general. Likewise saying, what should Brad Stevens be looking for if he trades Dennis Schroeder, a young developing talent or more draft value? So no one is like running from this. It's just the situation that it is. When they signed Dennis Schroeder at the non-taxpayer or the taxpayer mid-level, $5.7 million, it was clear he wasn't going to be here long-term, and they don't have his rights. So they can't just sign him at a higher number to bring him back next season, unless he's willing to play for roughly $7 million. That's not happening. So they have to explore every option that's out there. You see when Ricky Rubio goes down in Cleveland and the Cavs are starting to look around because they want to make and stay at the top of the East and make a playoff push, they go get Rajon Rondo from the Lakers. I thought that might have been a scenario where the Celtics could have of tried to get in there. Ultimately, you know, if you're trading him just for draft capital, you're probably getting back a second round pick. I'm not sure how much that helps you or changes the trajectory of the future. It does help because the Celtics have spent so many second round picks just acquiring traded player exceptions that I won't just rule out the fact that they would be helpful. But I do think you need to maybe hunt. You can maybe find a better deal in which could you bring back a shooter with rights. So in this situation, you know, to give an example, and to roll this back even further, when the Celtics first made the trade to move out Tristan Thompson, that three-way deal with Atlanta and Sacramento, you know, DeLon Wright was part of that deal. And I actually was hoping that he would land here. He didn't. It was Chris Dunn. Celtics moved on from that before the season even started. But could you call Atlanta and say, hey, Dennis Schroeder used to play for you. Could give you a nice little boost off the bench, point guard abilities. And could you take back DeLon Wright, who I believe is on an expiring deal? But unlike Dennis Schroeder, who has no rights because you signed him this offseason, because his rights have just been traded around in all these deals, you would have the ability to retain him into next season. Again, not the move that puts you over the top, not the move that changes the trajectory of this season or any future season, but does give you a shooter, something you desperately need, still gives you the same sort of scoring punch that you're looking for coming off the bench, and a player you can retain deeper into the season. So it might not necessarily just be, you know, moving Dennis Schroeder for a draft pick. And I think that Brad should explore all options. Ultimately, you know, maybe it's better if you're trying, especially if you're trying to keep the cap sheet clear for using that space and you're not going the trade route to add another star, to just try to take back as limited salary as possible, but it's also salary that could come off the books. And so it's all about flexibility. And that those are the sort of deals that I think Brad will have to look at.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Let's shift to the younger guys on the roster. A lot. I mean, it's so funny. Like, if people weren't screaming about trading Jason Tatum or Jaylen Brown, they wanted to know what happens with the young guys. But we all love backup quarterbacks. And so I'm going to just throw a stream of tweets out here at you. So from John Schwartz, Bubble Blabber. Do Peyton, Neesmith, Romeo, and Grant factor long-term in the team's plans? Romeo injury history seems to be an issue. Dick Grayson saying, at what point is it time to move away from Langford and Neesmith and find consistent players? Joe Grenier says, who will be more valuable to this team moving forward, Pritchard or Neesmith? And so I think this is a great conversation because there's a chance that going into next year, if the Celtics do want to use cap space, they're going to have to pick. And so I think we've seen Grant Williams emerge as a true even more than just a role player. I think he's put himself in the conversation as maybe a starter with the way he's both shot the three-pointer and for a team desperate for shooting. He's an attractive fit if the Celtics wanted to move him into that starting lineup, at least while Al Horford is struggling with his shot. And, you know, I think Romeo has shown had good moments. I think Neesmith can blossom with more time. I think he might be the most important part of this puzzle, because if he does get time at the end of the year and blossoms, then maybe you have your draft, your trade chip as you go in and you say, okay, you know, Washington Wizards, you want to move Bradley Beal. Well, not only are we overwhelming you with draft picks into the future, but what if we throw in Aaron Neesmith and some other desirable young talent? But again, that they have to make huge strides to get teams to feel like that's a value and a real commodity coming back. So, you know, kind of to go back to John's original question about like who figures into the long-term plans of the team. So I think Grant does. And I think he's shown versatility. He can play a little bit of the three and be a 3-and-D shooter. He can go up to the four and defend. He's got that strength. I like that versatility. He's got to show he can do it in when the minutes aren't there, and he's had opportunities to start the season and that has helped his development. But I think he's someone that can definitely help this team if that three-point shot continues to fall, which doesn't feel like an aberration now, where midway through the year and he's right up there as one of the best shooters in the league and one of the best corner three-point shooters in the league. Neesmith, and I just go back to it, I think with playing time, he will develop into something that can help this team. And whether that's as a trade asset or on the court, I'd like to see it happen on the court, because the Celtics are so thin on shooting that I think Aaron Neesmith could really help this team long-term if they just give him the opportunity. And like, look, I get it. I've talked about this at length. Like, Ime is doing this balance where he's trying to win games. First season at the helm, there's a pressure there, especially when you come to Boston. And it's not like your typical rebuilding program. So he's leaned on the Josh Richardsons and Dennis Schroeders of the world. But I think, especially as the Celtics start to pick that path, there's a chance that maybe that door opens a little bit wider for Neesmith and Pritchard. Pritchard, to me, is not a starter caliber guard in this league, but I think we've seen as he starts to come out of this slump, his shooting can certainly be valuable. I think he's got to continue to evolve as a playmaker and embracing that, being this focal point or being the floor general of a second unit. Maybe he'll get that opportunity more if Dennis Schroeder is moved out. So I'm interested to see. And then Romeo is a great wild card. Like, I think there's an NBA player there, like a very high level NBA player. The defense has been way beyond what I thought when he came into the league. I'm actually surprised the offense hasn't quite caught up, but you see glimpses of it. Ultimately, he's got to stay healthy. And that's coming from someone who sits here and waves pom-poms for Robert Williams, but sometimes feels like every time Romeo has a chance, you can throw Rob in there too. Sickness or a minor injury or whatever sets him back. So he's got to stay on the court and push that issue, especially because those 2019 guys, you know, their money's a little bit higher. There's decisions to be made there as the Celtics start to figure out what to do with cap space, if they go that cap space route this summer. All right, a couple more before we get over to our interview with Al Horford. The blame game. Ricky Rodriguez says, who's to blame so far in this season, the players or the coaching? Well, I'm just going to be honest. Like, I think every level deserves some level of criticism for the Celtics underperformance to this point. And that's fair or not. You know, there was a lot of changeover. There's a new coach. There's COVID. There's injuries. There's all that. The Celtics have not come close to meeting what I anticipated from this team this season. I think Brad Stevens did a pretty solid job given the mess that he kind of inherited from Danny Ainge, at least in terms of no draft picks in the treasure chest that was once overflowing, and moving off of Kemba's contract. We can debate that. That's a whole nother podcast episode as the season emerges and the pieces there we can do a deeper dive on, but did about as well as I could have thought coming into his first year as president. But the roster is still super thin on shooting. And I think that has been just a huge issue for this team this season. And maybe he was counting on Nesmith and Pritchard playing bigger roles, but as well as Grant has shot the ball, even Josh Richardson giving you it, it's clear like the lineups and rotations need more shooting, especially when the Jays are on the floor. That has to be a priority as he kind of figures out how to overhaul the complementary pieces moving forward. I think Ime gets a little bit of the blame just in terms of, you know, still trying to find those rotations. And again, plenty of extenuating circumstances, but, you know, sometimes there's double bigs and not enough shooting on the floor. I think the Celtics have to find the right mix of players out there. I do think he has to be willing in the second half of the year, whether the Celtics are going for it or not, to lean into those younger players a little bit more, maybe bring down minutes. We've heard him talk about wanting to lower Jason Tatum's total minutes. Maybe that's a chance by playing some of these younger guys and making sure that they develop as well. And then just like the players, they just haven't played to the level. Like, you know, individually I go through and I say, all right, you know, this guy's playing to what I thought and doing this and doing that. But the confluence of it all is that, and ultimately, end of games, they haven't been good. And so that's on everybody. That's on Jason and Jalen for not being able to lead this team better in those fourth quarter moments. It's they need more from Marcus and Rob and all the complementary pieces, but everybody needs to do a little bit more. And maybe there's a way that with better health, some of those things will start to come together. That's why I'm intrigued by this January slate. But yeah, it's been a little bit maddening that despite, you know, no obvious reasons beyond sometimes just lack of composure and effort, this team hasn't played as well as it has. That's why Stevie Splash 11, his tweet was, why do we suck? And yeah, I think that's something that a lot of Celtics fans are wondering. Why are the Celtics under 500 as they start to make this turn into the second half of the year? And I don't know. It's multiple seasons here that they have not, that they've been just sort of stuck at the 500 level. And here's what I'll leave you with before we get to Al is that my big thing is they've got to pick a path. And it's not been Brad Stevens' MO to downshift and go the tank route, which might get you the draft pick that sort of opens more opportunities for adding that third star. I think the other thing at play here is like, you never want to waste a season in which Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown are healthy, and because none of these are guaranteed. And so I think ultimately, when I try to envision which way the Celtics go with this, it's to kind of ride it out and hope that health and continuity and more time for Ime and maybe some move on the fringes from Brad is enough to keep them in this mix. My fear is that desire, if it doesn't work, leaves you in the middle. And then you're walking away with the 18th pick in the draft. And that's not as valuable anywhere near. It's like just such a drop off after the lottery in terms of what you can get and the moves you can make. And so they've got to be conscious of that. And, you know, maybe if they had lost to the Magic the other night, I'd be sitting here saying it's a lot easier to go the blow up route and let's not get lulled into false sense of security from one game against the Suns. But I'm very intrigued to see what they do the next 2 weeks. The schedule is a whole lot easier. But essentially the Celtics can't downshift and they have to be Very, very good in this stretch to encourage Brad Stevens to really buy into this group and pick that path towards being patient this year and hoping that it pays off, because the other path is pretty enticing in terms of, you know, it's not necessarily all right, we're tanking, but it's, you know, we're okay if games don't tip your way. And maybe there's a heightened emphasis on young player development, and maybe that puts you in better position coming into next season, especially if it does help you add a third impact player, which I still think is a mystery. I wish I could give you guys names. I think it's still a very much a wild card. You got to keep an eye on Beal just because of the situation and his relationship with Tatum. But I think there's someone else out there. It's just going to either come on the market from a disgruntled team, or, you know, something happens. And it's weird though. Now with the play-in spots, there's a lot more teams trying to win than trying to blow it up. And so that's a good thing for sellers, which is why the Celtics have to even more consider like how they move forward. But a lot of tough decisions. I don't have any Brad Stevens. I feel fortunate that I just answer questions out of a mailbag and don't have to actually make those decisions. But all right, let's downshift from my somewhat murky, where is this team going, and accelerate forward with a little positivity from Al Horford, who even told the fans a couple weeks ago, hey, hang in there. Things are going to get better, and we'll see if he was right. But here's our chat with Al from Celtics Post Up. You can catch it every Tuesday night, 8 p.m. on NBC Sports Boston. Go like, subscribe, check us out on the YouTube page. You know what to do on the podcast page. Like, subscribe, all that good stuff. Leave some comments. We'll catch you next time on the Celtics Talk podcast.
Time for us to bring in Celtics big man Al Horford into the show. Al, thanks so much for taking the time out to join us today. And this Celtics team with some winning momentum, winning those last two. How do you guys kind of bottle that up and keep that momentum going?
Feels good. Feels good to win those last couple. And the biggest thing for us is to continue to build that consistency and just finding ways to win. It's not easy to win. And every game it's been a grind, you know, for our group. So the whole key is just to continue to chip away at it and just find a way to actually just win games.
Yeah, you had a tweet amidst all the calamity and you guys riding that roller coaster where you told the fans, hey, stick with us. What gives you hope that this group will figure it out and go to that next level?
Just the group that we have. I feel like we just have we have too good of a team, too good of players, guys really trying to do the right things, guys that really I believe that really want to win. And it's been a difficult year, for us. And, you know, we're not making excuses. But, you know, we understand that at times can be very frustrating. So the biggest thing that I wanted to put with that tweet out there is for people to stick with us and that I feel like we're going to be fine. You know, we just need to keep plugging away at it.
And just like you mentioned, it's been a difficult year, players in and out of the lineup due to COVID and injuries. How challenging is that for this team and trying to find that chemistry and momentum out there on the floor?
It's definitely a challenge. But when you look around the league, everybody's going through it. We can't hold our heads on that. But the biggest thing for us is just to continue to build and play the right way and be very solid defensively, which we've been for a good part of the year, but just, you know, being consistent. And it's something that, right now, we hope that we start to get it going and really start making up some ground here with the wins.
You obviously got an experience with the Jays before you went to went to Philadelphia. What is the biggest difference you've noticed? Let's start with Jaylen, goes for 50 the other night. What's the biggest difference you noticed with Jaylen? And then I guess the same thing with Jason. What have you noticed from their development?
I think the confidence right off the bat. They were always confident players, but just the assertiveness, the embracing of being the guys, being the main guys. They were just playing so different. And Jaylen, trying to, be the best that he can in what he does, putting pressure on the rim, shooting the ball, getting out in transition, just finding ways to continuing to, you know, to be that great scorer that he is. And then with Jason, the same thing, just continuing to grow, continuing to read defenses, continuing to stay aggressive. It's been a very natural progression, and it's been that they've both have taken a huge step, you know, since I left.
And speaking of Jaylen Brown, 50 points, a career high the other night. What was the reaction in the locker room, or maybe what was the mood when you guys got back there?
Man, it was great. You know, everybody was just really happy for him. Jaylen is so quiet. And you know, he kind of goes about his business, puts his head down, and it's just kind of whatever. But we were excited. You know, we were excited for him. And I think Coach Udoka said something like, man, like Jaylen had 50, like it didn't even feel like he had 50. Like it was like a quiet 50, but it just speaks to kind of Jaylen. Like, you know, he has that ability to score. It's just that he did it so smoothly, you know, and we were just really happy. And Jaylen, I think, was just more relieved that, you know, that we won that game because, you know, we worked really hard for it. And he was obviously, you know, the biggest reason why.
Yeah, he did say after that win that he just needed to bleep and win. But I want to ask you about Ime. Obviously, same deal. You had a little experience with him in Philadelphia. What do you notice most about Ime as a head coach? And what's it like in that locker room? Is he holding you guys as accountable in there as he is when we see him at the podium and kind of calling guys out?
Yeah, no question. You know, Coach Udoka has been great, and you know, he's really making sure that the message is clear to us, what he expects from us, what he wants us to do. He's holding people accountable, and you know, him and his coaching staff are, you know, continuing to do a good job of preparing us, making sure that we're at our best, you know, when it's go time. And you know, for us, you know, we're at the point, like I said earlier, that it's just time for us to start turning things around and really start putting it together.
And we know that you've been with Coach Ime Udoka when he was in Philadelphia. Just in what areas have you seen him grow now that he's in a head coaching position?
Just being an assistant, being a head coach, obviously is totally different. So just him kind of taking in the reins and, you know, he can be loose at times when he needs to, he can tighten up when he needs to, and kind of be assertive and do things like that. So, he's been very versatile and just, you know, really just kind of, feeling out the locker room and just kind of going, you know, kind of doing his own thing. When you're an assistant, it's kind of a certain way. But now that he's the head coach, you know, obviously things are different. And, you know, I feel like he's doing a good job.
Al, the other night they played a little video on the Jumbotron. They asked for everybody's favorite cheat meal. And you said cereal. Mm. I'm wondering if you can rank me your favorite cereals or what's your go-to on that like Frosted Flakes. What are we doing here?
Yeah, you know, it's funny because, yeah, I mean, I would have to say if I find myself in a hotel and I want something sweet, because I'm not a big dessert guy, mm-hmm. but I do enjoy cereal every now and then, and that's just not part of the way that I eat. So if I'm on the road at some point, you know, you're kind of very limited in the hotels with the kind of cereals that they have, and Frosted Flakes is a good go-to. Ooh. So, you know, that's what I splurge on, and I enjoy it.
See, I think cheat meal, and then I think of, like, what I do, which is, like, I heat up a cookie and put some ice cream on there, some caramel, like, all the extra fixings, and then Al Horford gets on the show and says, like, oh, yeah, my cheat meal is cereal, and now I
say my healthy meal is cereal. Like, I don't understand.
I was not expecting you to say cereal at all. Also, I want to take a look at this backdrop because we're not going to go through this whole interview, Chris Forsberg, and not address the backdrop that Al Horford has right here. What city is this? Chicago? What city is this? New York? This New York you got in the background?
That's a good. I think it's New York. I found it on my backgrounds, and I was like, you know, let me try this today. I like it. So I think it's New York.
Yeah. All right.
I absolutely love this, Al Horford, that you have put this in your backgrounds, especially for us. You got to make it look good, and I appreciate that.
I got to ask you something. We were doing some research again. I wanted to find some lighter questions, and I looked it up, and it said when you were in high school, you finished fifth in voting for Mr. Basketball in Michigan. Can you even name the four guys in front of you, and do you just, like, text them and be like, hey, how's it going? Like, NBA superstar, like, you know, like, oh, I don't understand how you finished fifth.
Yeah, I mean, well, I went to, you know, a smaller school, and actually the guy that won it was a really good player, Drew Knight. So mm-hmm. I played with him in AAU, point guard. He went to Michigan State, a really, really good player. The other four, honestly, I can't tell you who they are, but definitely Drew Knight. So, you know, he was one of my guys, and he was a really good high school player.
I love it. I love it. All right. Thanks so much, Al, for stopping by the show. We appreciate it.
All right. Thanks for having me, guys.